All right, so we are here. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for showing up to the beer edition, our first beer edition and second release of Cheese in a Glass. I'm Jason Hendrick, also known as the Hungry Man sometimes, on the radio and with Curtis during Pints and Pairings. And I run Everybody's Hungry. Everybody's Hungry is a food-focused educational and fundraising group here in the county. So this event right here, not only are we going to be learning about cheese, learning about beer, but we're going to be benefiting FoodShare as well. A portion of everyone's ticket is going back to FoodShare to help the more than 74,000 people that need hunger assistance and kind of a bounce back to their feet every month. So I appreciate you joining us. It's more than just trying some beer and some cheese and a little meat on the plate. It's actually giving back to your community, so thank you very much. I have some people I want to introduce that are part of this team. For this release, we have Joby Yobi, owner of Barrel House Barrel 101. He's going to be speaking to the beer portion. And then we have Fritz Leon. He's the owner of Coastal Specialty Products. And he supplied all the cheese. So we're going to be taking you through that pairing. For those of you who didn't guzzle down your first glass yet, we're going to talk about that aspect. A couple of other special guests that are here with us, Tom Hilton from the Tom and Sandy's 805 show on Saturday morning, which is I'm a part of. I have the food and kind of restaurant segment on Saturday mornings. And Gene Benitez. Jean Benitez sitting with us here as well. She's the donor relations manager for FoodShare. So every time we have one of these events that's benefiting FoodShare, we allow a representative from FoodShare to come in and give a little exposure. Again, a portion of your proceeds are going back to help them. Each month, 74,500 or so people are being helped by FoodShare and their 166 partner organizations. That includes pantries, churches, shelters, and they need all the assistance you can get. When we come through that facility, they're doing dry goods, they're doing produce, they're doing meats, and probably 90% of their operation is all volunteer-based and driven. So they've got 350 people a week, approximately, volunteer-base-wise, that are coming through their facilities, helping distribute food, helping to organize what's coming in and get those shipments out. So when we talk about impact to the community, FoodShare is a big part of what we're trying to help, and big, large effort as to why Everybody's Hungry even exists. It started out as a blog, and we're moving into these events, trying to give back to the community through education about the food you're eating, and again, helping FoodShare. So when you go out to the other events or you stay on our mailing list, remember three goals, and I hope you take away a little bit of each of the three goals. We want to share a passion for food, so what you're seeing on the plate, we're going to talk about and tell you why we love it. We want to educate about that food and then raise awareness. So when we go through these kind of pairings, there's a couple things I want you to know. One, cheese making. Very basic, high level. I'd encourage you all to try it because that's my summer project we haven't talked about yet. I'm actually going to try to make my own cheese. But cheese making is fairly simple. You need a good quality milk. It could be goat's milk, sheep's milk, cow's milk. There's some other obscure milks out there that I wouldn't play with, especially for my first time. But very simple. You take the whole milk. You need some kind of curdling agent, and that can be vinegar or an acid or a rennet, which is a typical bacteria that actually is found in the gullet and the stomachs of most of the grazing style animals. It's a natural bacteria that actually starts to curdle that cheese and separate the proteins from the whey. And when you drop out the whey in the liquid part, you're left with those more solid proteins. You can season those with salt and different ingredients and press them and dry them out to different degrees. So that end up with the semi-soft cheeses, the very fresh cheeses, all the way to very hard Parmesans and Romanos and whatnot. And it all really comes down to, what did you season it with? What type of bacteria is in that cheese? And how much whey did you remove during the process? So when we work around the plate, most of these are considered kind of a semi-soft. We don't have any super firm, like almost shreddable or shavable style cheeses. We want to stay very soft tonight, and I think these go great with the beer. I'm going to pass the mic over to Joby for a minute and just give a high-level overview of what beer making is about as well, because each one of these processes really lends to the different flavors and why these items on the plate go well together.
All right. As most of you know, I'm Joby. Joby Yobi, but I think I've decided to just go with Joby, kind of like Cher and Prince and Madonna. I didn't want to say that one, but that's fine. But thank you very much for coming. Thanks for bearing with us. We got kind of everybody came in at different times, so I hope you guys are enjoying the first beer, and some of you are getting into the cheese, hopefully, already. So, like Jason said, I just wanted to give you an overview about the beer-making process. he said cheese making was very simple and fun, and actually so is beer at the very, very core of it. It's very easy, very fun to get into. I mean, you can start with a homebrew kit for about $100 over at Surf Brew, or Craigslist is a great place that you can find used equipment. People buy it and then they upgrade. So it's very, very easy to get into. If you get hooked, like a lot of us do, like I did, some of the guys here, I'm looking around, Curtis, Rob, then you will start buying, you know, more equipment, and all of a sudden you'll have a mini brewery in your garage. But that's, and it's fine, and that's the fun of it. But you don't need all that stuff. At the very core, you just need the four basic ingredients that everybody should know when we're talking about beer. Is just, you need barley or grain, some type of grain, something that you can mash and convert. Sugar, you need the sugars to get alcohol later on. And also some of your flavors. You need water, of course. That's the main ingredient in every beer, is water. You need hops. How much, how little, what kind? I mean, it's really not important until you figure out what style you're making. But at the very, very least, it's, you need hops, barley, water, and of course yeast. Without yeast, we wouldn't have any of the alcoholic drinks that we have. I mean, beer, wine, liquor, everything starts with these great, great organisms, the yeast. And yeast is kind of an interesting one that we're going to see today, because we have a few different styles where the flavors are coming through because of the yeast a lot. The very first one, should we go into the beer already? Or? So the very first one is it's Omegang, one of my favorite Belgian-style breweries. It's in Cooperstown, New York, home of the Baseball Hall of Fame, and pretty much Omegang, and I think that's about it if you go there. So it's great, great brewery. It's owned by Duvel, a really large brewery in Belgium. And this is their American project that they did. It's just a way for them to make the beers here without having to ship them. So we get Belgian fresh beer, but here in America. So it's really nice to be able to get it. It comes from New York. This particular one is called the Hennepin. It's a farmhouse Saison. Saison just means season, basically, French for season. So this is going to be your lighter one on the list. So it's just French for season. And the reason for that was, this was something that was brewed in the winter. It was, they let it sit, let it condition. And in the spring, summertime, when the workers got off work, this was their drink. This was the farmer's beer when he came home. Because of that, it was light in alcohol. And as we tend to do in America, this one's not light in alcohol. It's 7.7%. So this is an exaggerated alcohol content for a Saison. But that's cool. It's fun. And it works really well with this beer. You can't really taste it or anything like that. The Saison style is spontaneous fermentation, which is a really cool process. I mean, it's, you know, when you get into yeast, there's a lot of culturing and there's labs and there's really a lot of work that goes into your yeast. And, you know, breweries have secret yeast. They drive it around in armored trucks and various crazy things like that. But this is wild yeast that's in the air. And so I'm sure Omegang is using something that they bought, a wild yeast that they've bought. But in the very core of it is, be able to have louvers actually in your farm, where you would just open the doors and just leave the wort, which is the unfermented beer, you just leave it out, and yeast would come in, and whatever's in the air, and that's what you get. I've read something that some of the Belgian beers have like over 40 or 50 different microorganisms in them, but all that contributes to the flavor and it gives the stuff. So this particular style now, since this is made in a brewery, not, you know, open fermentation, but they've managed to culture which exact flavor they want. So this is a very, very good replica of a farmhouse, except that it's higher alcohol, but it's very spicy. And the reason that we chose it to go with the Sage Derby was because of that.
Sure. And Fritz is going to come in and talk to us about the Sage Derby, how it's made and why it's flavored that way. When we look at the tasting, also make sure you're kind of rolling the beer around in your mouth. There are a lot of different flavor profiles you're going to get based on the zone. There's five major zones. Also get a good smell on it, because most of the tasting actually comes through your olfactory. But as Joby said, the spiciness of the beer goes nicely with the kind of herby mellowness of the Sage Derby. And the same thing with the cheese. Make sure you're getting a nice bite of that. Move it around. There's texture there. And the flavors just start to meld. Also, if you take an inhale after either the cheese or the beer, that oxygen moving across your palate will begin to open up some additional organisms. And the flavors will begin to change, especially if the beer starts to warm up. So, Fritz, the cheese.
Hi, hello everyone. Thank you very much for coming. I see some familiar faces. Thank you very much. This is our second of a series, and we're hoping to do some more around town. And my background, I've been involved in the food business for over 18 years, and I've been in the French import mostly. I've done a lot of import for French food. And as I'm getting older, I thought it was the best thing for me to do is to settle down here in Ventura, which I'm loving it. But I have a passion for food and my passion for cheese. I have a passion for cheese, some finer food. I have passion for caviar, for smoked sturgeon, things of that sort. So tonight we're gonna do something different. I have done whiskey, I've done scotch, I've done bourbon, I've done wine, but this is my first one. I must tell you about the beer and the cheese. The beer and the cheese was a challenge because it hasn't been done traditionally. You know, I've gone to San Francisco to a food show where we had to taste cheeses. It was a professional setting, a big room, and we chased the beer with milk. I mean, the cheese with milk. It was awful. I mean, it was awful. So here we're going to do the wine. First, I need to talk to you about, Jason touched a point about the milk. Where does the milk come from? The milk comes from the cow, of course. But what is the cow eating?
Grass.
Grass from here. And their grass is not that old, but it's still. I want to do the analogy of the olive oil, okay? The olive oil, the olive trees in California are incredible. They produce a lot of olive oil, but they're not mature, okay? In France, where most of the cheese in Europe, Monsanto is not present. Okay, so all the cheese that we're going to taste tonight, Monsanto is not involved at all in this. We are tasting two cheeses, two from England, one from Germany, and one from Wisconsin. The Wisconsin cheese is the one that gives us the most trouble. So first, this is a cheddar cheese. As you see it, it's a block. It comes in a 9-pound block. And this block, the way it's marbled like this, is because of sage. What they do with the sage, they infuse the sage in the milk. As the milk is curdling, they infuse the sage. But some people, what they do, instead of sage, they use parsley, they use green corn. So they put the juice of green corn, and they put this. But traditionally, the sage, you will taste the sage as this. If you guys ever get a chance to go to the supermarket and have the experience of taking this cheese with corn tortilla, okay? This makes a great quesadilla. It melts perfect with a corn tortilla. The flour corn tortilla, the corn tortilla gave it a kick. So enjoy this cheese for now, and let me know if you have something you'd like to share and tell me what you think about it. It took us a while to find the beers. As the name of the establishment, Barrel House 101, so I had four cheeses and 101 beers. Anyway, thank you very much for coming and enjoy. Here you go.
So I know that a lot of you are talking through with your table, but we're going to go to Alyssa real quick and get some of her feedback as to why the beer and the cheese went well for her and what she thought about it.
All right. So when I was tasting, I would take a sip of the beer and it was a little bit spicy and delicious, and then when I bit the cheese, the herb flavor just really shined through, and they just went super well together. It was delicious.
Excellent. Thanks, Alyssa. So what we're going to do is kind of gauge everyone's tasting. We're not going to try to rush you. We gauge for an hour and a half, but if it goes a little longer and you guys are okay with that, we're okay with that. So take your time. I encourage everyone to meet people at your table. We're using this as a networking event as well. So if you walk away with somebody's phone number, whether for business or personal, all the better.
Wait, I'm not, business or personal? Is that where we're going? Say, Alyssa, if she can't hear me, but that was a perfect description of what makes a cheese pairing perfect. And she was able to use her own vocabulary. She used her own descriptors, and it came through just marvelous. Thank you, Alyssa.
Well, we are going to go on just to the next one. You don't have to rush through again, though, but I do want to start talking about the next pairing. As Fritz said, it was kind of a challenge pairing beers and cheeses. There was a certain amount of creaminess and a richness to the cheese that we were concerned would overpower some of the beers. So we actually went through probably 15 or 20 beers trying to figure out what was going to work best. And we kept shuffling things and we were kind of moving around. And I think the pairings we came up with are really great. What you'll also notice, though, is as your beer warms up and as your cheese warms up, those flavor compounds will change a little bit. What you're missing out on sometimes when things are served too cold is a numbing of the palate. And the taste buds are really going to miss a lot of the nuances of the beer and the cheese. Because when you numb the taste buds or when you scald them with too much heat, you really lose the base and the flavor profile of whatever you're tasting. And as you'll know about pints and pairings, if you start following our blog, Curtis and I never recommend sitting down and going in depth to some exorbitant description or really going above and beyond with your friends about all the different flavors you're pulling out every time you sit down for a meal. But if you're trying something for the very first time, you're trying a beer, a cheese, or a sandwich, anything for the very first time, take a minute and stop. You don't have to be considered a foodie to enjoy the food you're tasting. The very first time you try it, you're going to come up with things that maybe you didn't experience or don't have familiarity with, and that's a great way to experience food. Then the next time you have it, just scarf it if you're hungry. It doesn't matter. But at least try to understand what's in there a little bit, especially living in Ventura County in Southern California. We're a mecca for produce and fresh food. We've got a lot of great craft food establishments. They're putting out quality products, and they're really hoping you're going to appreciate their food and their item at a deeper level than just a sit-down meal without understanding what's on your plate. So the next pairing, you'll notice that there's a smokiness coming off the plate. That cheese is a German Raukäse. Say it for me, Fritz.
I'm gonna have to ask Susan to talk about it. Anyway, this gentleman that brought this cheese around is Mr. Basil. His name is Basil. Et voilà. Basil came out. He went up in the Bruder Basil. How do you pronounce it?
Bruder
Basil. It's from, I have an accent, so it's from Bavaria.
It's the Haitian coming through.
But anyway, here in the States, a cheese like this, you would find it and you would call it, here it's called a smoked mozzarella, okay? It's a cow's milk, okay? Again, what is the cow eating, okay? It's from a particular region of the world. It's from Bavaria. It's next to Germany. And the monks in Germany, it is Germany. Oh, no, but the gentleman was, well, he is Bavaria, voila. So, but anyway, it's what the cows are eating. Monsanto is not present, okay? So, seriously, I mean, you think about it. Even here, when you're taking a shower, if you don't have a water softener in your house, try to water your plants. It's salt left over. Yeah, there's salt in the water, a lot of salt in the water. So God knows what goes. The salt goes to the plants and blah, 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 and you're eating it, okay? But this has been done forever. So the monks did that. They made it in the form of a brick, okay? It's a semi-soft cheese. It's pressed, it's pasteurized, and it's smoked, okay? So this kind of cheese will last you forever. You know, again, good melting cheese, mozzarella. We make pizza with it. Try to make a mozzarella, something mozzarella with fresh trout. Oh, la, la. I can imagine that. But anyway, enjoy this one. It's not too smoky.
Yeah, you'll notice it smells smokier than it tastes on the palate. This one gave Joby the fits the other day when we were trying to figure out what to go with. Because when we first smelled it, we had like bacon notes and smoky, almost campfire, brisket kind of notes. And we're like, what are we going to put with this? Anything is going to be overpowered. But Joby picked out a great beer to go with it. I think they work really well together. And take it away, my friend. Oh, and for those at-home viewers right now watching us live, and for anyone who checks on the podcast later, I'm sorry for standing in front of the camera. You missed everything except the back of my shirt.
Yeah, so just like Jason said, if you smell the rind on this, it is so smoky. And so when he was here last week, and as soon as he opened the package, it's like, oh, all I could think of was like, okay, this is going to be really smoky. But then you eat it in the middle of it, and it's totally different. I mean, it totally messed with us. Went from one extreme to the other. But so if you eat it, you can try it both ways. Try it with the rind and then kind of try it without and see. But either way, it still works with this beer. So the Golden Road Brewing is fairly new. I think they're about 2 years old, I want to say, maybe even a little less. They're down in L.A., close to Griffith Park, so kind of where the 134 and the 5 all that little area right there. In fact, I think from their patio, you could see part of the mountains of Griffith Park. And this is their interpretation. Again, we're talking, the Omegang was kind of the interpretation of a Belgian beer. This is a English mild, but it's a little, has a little bit of roasted, smoked malt, actually, not roasted, smoked malt in it. So that kind of plays up when you eat the, if you taste the rind and then kind of drink the beer again, you'll taste, it's a very small percentage, so it's not going to be a huge smoky beer. It's not quite as sweet or malty as an English brown. I think that's why I like it a little better. Some of the English browns get a huge caramel flavor, really, really heavy on that. So we were talking earlier about malts, and you see the obvious difference between the two beers. One is light colored, the other one's darker. Why is that? It's because of the malt. It's because of what type of malt you're using. Are you using roasted? This probably has roasted malt, chocolate malts. You get just a touch of that in there. A really good beer by itself, but I think it's much better when you eat the cheese and then kind of come back to it and taste it. And the low sweetness, which I like. And so when you get into some of these browns, you're getting into the higher level. You're thinking like, oh, what's the next step? So porter or stout would be the next logical step from this. Much more roasty, though, and much more fuller body. These are lighter bodied. It's about 5.5%, I think, alcohol. Just a really good English mild interpretation. Get up off of that brown. It's a great name too. Thanks for mentioning that.
And when we're going back to some of these podcasts that Joby and Curtis and I are putting together, they're focusing on beer. There's three kind of terms that we'll be using a lot, and I think they apply here tonight as well. You got complementary notes, resonating notes, and contrasting notes. And what those really refer to are how the beer and the cheese, or the beer and the chocolate, or the beer and whatever it is you're eating, play with each other. So a complementary note means that they've got flavors that work well together and are somewhat similar. The resonating note means that something in the beer is drawing out a similar tone in the item, but maybe they go well, maybe they don't, but it's definitely pulling out similar tones with those two pairings. And then the contrasting means that they're opposite, but yet they work well together. There could be a sweet and spicy, or there could be a salty and a sweet. Each one of those falls typically into those three categories.
I just wanted to reiterate something that Jason said about temperature. That's something that we get asked about a lot here, where somebody comes in is like, I want my beer colder. I want it 34, 33 degrees. And I just want, there are certain, it's totally fine to serve them.
Those
maybe
are usually
38, 37
really sloppy
degrees.
Light lagers.
Yeah. There's certain beers that'll taste that, but it's a good thing to try.
You probably won't find those on tap here, right?
No, we don't have any of those on tap. We have lagers for sure, and they are colder, but try it at home. One of the things, just kind of being in the wine business forever too, is take a really, really bad Chardonnay and stick it in your freezer before your guests get there and just put it out on the table. Everyone's going to love it because you can't taste anything, and don't let it warm up. So take your $4 bottle and or your $2 chuck, stick it in the freezer.
I hear some people over there going, it's true. Oh, shame on you guys. Shame.
If you've never tried it, I bet you will at your next party. But it's true, though. Cold really masks the flavor. I mean, Jason hit it on the head. It really masks it. So as these are warming up, especially this one, the roastiness can start coming out, the smoky. It's really cool to see how they change. So I think we've been trained to drink our beer way too cold forever. We all grew up on that, but it's different beers, different temperatures for sure. And if you can't control all of them, it's good to get like a nice medium. 40 degrees is a really nice temperature. 39, 40, 41 degrees is a great temperature to start because you can let them warm up. And Fritz mentioned that about the cheese also, like never buy, you know, never right out of the refrigerator. You want it to warm up.
A good 30, good 30 or so minutes is a great time to let that cheese warm up and still have a cooler temperature to the palate, but not really mask those flavors. You'll also notice that as the cheese starts to warm up, there's a certain amount of sweating that will occur, and that's actually okay. You don't want to get so warm that it doesn't taste good or it's mushy, but that sweating is actually those organic compounds and the proteins, the milk proteins, starting to break down a little bit. And 30 to 40 minutes is probably max. I would let it sit out before serving, but it's a good opportunity for that cheese to really enhance the flavors, warm up some of those organic compounds, let off some of the beautiful aromas. The stinkier cheeses, I would recommend maybe serving those on the patio if you're going to let it warm up that long. But they're going to be more vibrant, and you're going to get a lot more out of it if you let it warm up a little bit. I think, Curtis, you want to jump in for a little taster? Are you getting a little beer over there? Oh, we need to get our soundboard engineer man a drink here.
Actually, you know, to back up on what Jason is talking about the temperature of the beer, temperature means a lot. You know, I find myself sometimes taking coffee and putting coffee in the freezer. Why do I put coffee in the freezer? Because other people do it. But if you go where the coffee is grown, there's no refrigeration. So what's wrong with the freezer here? You know, there's no refrigeration where the coffee is grown, but yet here we put it in the freezer.
So cheese to be even, I don't know about the beer, but a cheese, you need the cheese to be at ambient temperature. So the same temperature that you're in, you want the cheese to be like, when it's too cold, it masks everything. So ambient temperature, if you have a 70% milk, 70% fat cheese, like a Brie Savarin, which is Jason's one of our favorite fruit cheese, it's 70% fat. When it's at ambient temperature, it melts. You could eat it with a spoon. It's all good. Where's Jason? Where did he go? So now we're going to go into the third part. Jason, you have some technical difficulties? We're going to go with the salami now? Or okay.
Yeah, talk about it, please.
Okay. You don't like the cheese? You don't like the cheese.
I had a big meal.
You know, another thing, too, in Europe, this gentleman here that's with us, he just mentioned that he had a big meal. Traditionally in Europe, you eat cheese after your meal. You know, it's, I don't know why. Just like in San Francisco, you chase milk, you chase cheese with milk, not wine. I mean, come on. Ridiculous. But we're going to talk about the salami right now. The salami, bottom line, a good salami is bottom line pork, okay? This salami that we're going to taste, it's got an Italian name called finocchiona. Finocchiona, I read a story about it. That's the good thing about the internet. You read more than being in the food business. There's a couple of people in San Francisco that make salamis. I mean, it's incredible. I go visit their plant, and you see the meat, you see the pork, you see the first stage of the pork, and then you taste the finished water. You walk in, you put a net in your hair. And you walk in and you taste the aromas and the spices that are in those packing houses. It's incredible. But this salami in particular needs to be at least 3 to 4 inches to be called a salami. But that really never existed. So there is a misconception about the plural of salami. Salami in plural is salumi. S-A-L-U-M-I. But, you know, I've seen salamis with an S in plural, so it's a salami in this case. This particular salami, there's a story behind it. And there was a story that someone went into a farmhouse and stole some salami. And he did not want to get caught, so he put it in a barrel full of fennel. So if you see this salami, there's some fennel in it. You'll taste the fennel. So the story kept on going, and it's still made here in the States. Right now, the USDA has, you want to have a question? This is a paying customer. So he wants another thing here. So now we know the thing about the salami. And I'll talk about the cacciatore. Okay, this is the cacciatore. There's also another salami called the cacciatorini, which is even smaller. Cacciatorini. It's usually, I would say, about maybe two inches. This one, as you see, is not 3 to 4 inches, okay? It is still called a salami, okay? And this one, again, it's a smaller one. The pork, there's more spices. I find this to be a little saltier. This is great on a picnic, okay? It's not a natural casing. It's very authentic. It's 100% pork. And a lot of spices and peppers in it. There's more black pepper in this one than the last one I just talked about. And I wanted to bring some fennel seeds and to put it on that. Unfortunately, that slipped my mind. I didn't get a chance to do it. But thank you very much for pointing that out. I get sidetracked on this one, the salami. But you'll taste the difference between this one and the last one. The last one that we're going to close in, the larger one, the 3 to 4 inches one, it's more of a sweeter. So it's a good ender. And also, it's a good beginner. If you're having guests over, You want them to open, to open their palate. How are they going to, what they going to eat? But you want to neutralize their palate. Give them that salami. It's just, with, especially with the fennel, it smooths it out. But anyway, enjoy this one. And with the beer, what's Joby?
Yep, and the beer for the next two cheeses is coming around right now.
The reason that we chose those salamis in that sequence, okay? This cacciatore, the cacciatore is opening up your palate to something that you're going to expect at the next beer. That is why we chose it. That is why we chose the larger one at the end to smooth it out. It took us a while. We spent about 3 hours, 2.5 hours, but enjoy.
My name's been tossed around quite a bit, so I'm going to come around if anyone wants to speak. But Gene pointed out a great tone. With the get off of that brown, there's a chocolatiness that kind of finishes on the back of the palate. And I think it's really nice that, you know, when you look at the smokiness of the cheese, it brings out some of that sweetness.
Pepper with a sweet going on. But it works so well together. So white lambic, spontaneous fermentation again. That we were talking about earlier, wild yeast, mostly barley grain, but there's a lot of wheat in lambics. Most people don't know that, actually. So people that are allergic to wheat or whatever, they always have to ask. But typically 30 to 40% of the lambic is wheat-based. And this one has, from what we could tell, has no actual fruit added to it. So as far as they're letting us know, but the flavors are, I mean, they're there. They're definitely there. And this beer changes. Like, if you buy this beer and you keep a couple of bottles, put them in your fridge or your cellar or whatever, it'll change. I mean, this beer ages. Like, it keeps changing. It'll get more of a honey, toffee-like character. The fruit comes out, and it's just from fresh beer to kind of cellared beer, it's a totally different animal. Mort Subic. So it is... Should be your third one on your beer list there. And if you ever go to Brussels, there's actually a cafe, a brasserie called A la Mort Subit. And it's really cool. It's an old school place. They still wear the, you know, just the traditional, the old, the long aprons, and great place. We do have it. It should be in a small little bottle, like a little 12-ounce bottle. Like a little 11-ounce little bottles. They don't do the big ones on this one. They do, I think they only do about 3 beers, the Mort Subit does. So the brewery's a little bit outside of Brussels, but the if you're ever there, I recommend you go to that, just to have a beer there, because it's so old school and copper inside and brass and really cool. And there is definitely a belief, talking about the yeast, that the yeast in Brussels is, you know, of course, different than the yeast in Bruges and the yeast in the rest of the country, and that Brussels has some of the best yeast for lambics, and Cantillon is in Brussels. If you ever can get your hands on some Cantillon, if you find yourself liking these flavors and you want to delve more into the lambics and the sours, fantastic brewery. Very hard to find, unfortunately. You'll find yourself going on a quest just to find them and start looking online and doing, but great place and great sours and lambics.
So the light beer is next, but it is still a surprise twist. So when you taste it with this cheese, when we go through with the black pepper, white cheddar, it is still unique. It's still going to be different than what you expected. So fault me for getting it in the wrong order.
That's what happens when I walk away. I should stay in the room. All right, we'll get you guys back on track now. So we're doing the Mort Subit white lambic, which is the white light beer, with the cracked pepper cheddar. That should be the real obvious one right there with the black pepper flakes. This by far was the hardest cheese to pair on the whole day that we did. The pepper is so pronounced. It tastes like just freshly ground. I mean, like if you just took a pepper mill and just cracked pepper on your plate. I mean, it's so pronounced. The Mort Subit, it was like, it's a sweet beer. It's apricot-y, peachy. And you guys tell me what you taste in it, but it's definitely sweet, but the salt and the pepper. So this, I think I don't know how many beers we did with this cheese till we finally figured out something, but it works so well together. So white lambic, spontaneous fermentation again, that we were talking about earlier, wild yeast, mostly, mostly barley grain, but there's a lot of wheat in lambics. Most people don't know that, actually. So people that are allergic to wheat or whatever, they always have to ask. But typically 30 to 40% of the lambic is wheat-based. And this one has, from what we could tell, has no actual fruit added to it. So as far as they're letting us know. But the flavors are, I mean, they're there. They're definitely there. And this beer changes. Like, if you buy this beer and you keep a couple of bottles, put them in your fridge or your cellar or whatever, it'll change. I mean, this beer ages. Like, it keeps changing. It'll get more of a honey, toffee-like character. The fruit comes out, and it's just from fresh beer to kind of cellared beer, it's a totally different animal. Mort Subic. So it should be your third one on your beer list there. And if you ever go to Brussels, there's actually a cafe, a brasserie called A la Mort Subic, and it's really cool. It's an old school place. They still wear the, you know, just traditional, the old, the long aprons, and great place. We do have it. It should be in a small little bottle, like a little 12-ounce bottle. Like a little 11-ounce little bottles. They don't do the big ones on this one. They do, I think they only do about three beers, the Mort Subic does. So the brewery's a little bit outside of Brussels, but the if you're ever there, I recommend you go to that, just to have a beer there, because it's so old school and copper inside and brass and really cool. And there is definitely a belief, talking about the yeast, that the yeast in Brussels is, you know, of course, different than the yeast in Bruges and the yeast in the rest of the country, and that Brussels has some of the best yeast for lambics, and Cantillon is in Brussels. If you ever can get your hands on some Cantillon, if you find yourself liking these flavors and you want to delve more into the lambics and the sours, fantastic brewery. Very hard to find, unfortunately. You'll find yourself going on a quest just to find them and start looking online and doing, but great place and great sours and lambics.
Hi, I'm Curtis Taylor, and I co-host a radio show called Happy Hour, and I wanted to tell you about a great designated driver service called We're Driving. As you might have imagined, I really enjoy having a good time, but before I do, I always make sure I have a designated driver, and that's why I use We're Driving after every show. We're Driving is so easy to use. You go out, you have fun, and We're Driving gets you and your car home safe and sound. It really is that easy. This is how it works. We're Driving sends out a pair of drivers to meet you at your car when you're ready to go home. One of those drivers then drives you and your car home. Visit WeirdDriving.com. That's WERE Driving.com, or call 805-421-9706 for rates and to schedule your pickup time. And do me a favor, when you make your reservation, tell them you heard about We're Driving on Happy Hour. Oh, and don't forget to tip your drivers. Cheers.
For anybody doing any kind of pairing or party, have alcohol out with people around.
Yeah.
It's a great little icebreaker. But yeah, after 20 ounces of some pretty high octane beer, everybody's...
I think people don't appreciate how lubricated you can get off of a 4-ounce pour. Yeah. And
well, when you have food in front of you too, you don't realize the impact, because you think, oh, I'm eating and, you know, I'm soaking up some of the alcohol, which is, to a certain degree, is true.
It's
but
true, yeah.
Those little fuzzy bubbles, and they're doing their thing no matter what.
Yeah, well, I mean, if anything, that was a lot of fun, Jason. Thanks for including us.
I'm happy to have everyone, and the partnership with you and with Fritz was amazing. And having the happy hour broadcasting live during our event was so cool. We got some feedback from the guest that said, hey, having that guy over there and interjecting his information was really neat. It's an excellent part.
Oh, Fritz. I know, for Fritz. I'm picking up a microphone. So
Fritz is a man of few
Jason,
words.
You're there we go. Hold on a sec. Let me turn this up.
Here comes Fritz Leon from Coastal Specialty Products.
Let me turn it up real quick.
So Fritz was our cheese...
cheesemonger.
Monger tonight, yeah, yeah, definitely.
That's a new name for me, the cheesemonger.
The cheesemonger.
Should I put that on your business card?
It's the cheese supplier.
Yeah. So. And Matt Ray is hanging out behind him, one of our attendees. Nice to have you here. This is Matt's second event. He's a veteran at this point.
Nice. He's looking forward to the scotch and the tequila and cheese.
Who
is what he said.
Yeah, who isn't? looking forward to scotch and cheese. Oh, my word. That's
the tequila one is going to be a hard one, though.
No, no.
No, I think it'll be fine.
It's going to go down easy, but pairing it up is going to be difficult.
Yeah, yeah, to pair it. I'm thinking oysters and tequila, and what am I
going
to do?
We're going
do
way beyond here? Cheese. That's awesome. I'm in. Yeah, Fritz, you were talking something about smoked fish and caviar.
Yeah, the that next one awesome. I'm thinking about smoked fish. We have a tendency to, when we think about smoked fish, for example, when you drive down to Ojai, on the way to Ojai, as I think in Oakview, there's a supermarket there, it smokes fish. But when you take the fish, it's a block. It's a block of meat, block of fish. It's smoked, it's hard, it's dried. It's hard, it's dried. But when the smoked fish that I'm talking about, it's cold smoke. It's done in Los Angeles. It's done on order when I order them. The chef there, he smokes anything that he favors. But his mainstay is smoked salmon.
Oh, awesome.
He slices it very, very, very thin. And he does a smoked fish. The other fish that he does is a smoked sturgeon and the smoked trout. The sturgeon, you have to get it at the right time. Once you get it at the right time, you call him ahead of time and he smokes it for you. So the next one we have to do, we have to include the smoked sturgeon.
One thing that adds a dimension, you know, we had that double near the end, which I think would go really well with the smoked sturgeon. And even maybe that get up off of that brown.
Yeah,
you
nice
know, that
roasty.
Style, that roasty, Belgian, caramely, malty kind of note, I think would be pretty cool.
I mean, when you said sturgeon and caviar, I thought vodka.
Well, you know,
that's
of course.
That's the easy
you know,
one. But
So how do we finish this event, this upcoming event? So we do the smoked trout, the smoked salmon, the smoked sturgeon. Of course, we're going to finish with some blinis and some creme fraiche and some caviar to top it off with.
A little saltiness, maybe a little
some quail
that sounds
egg.
Awesome.
Some of that tart and sourness from the creme fraiche and a little sweetness as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're getting out all the flavor components. Your mouth will go away happy.
Yeah, definitely. So, Fritz, your company, Coastal Specialties, right? That's
yeah, nice. Coastal Specialty Food.
I mean, you guys are cheese, everything? I mean, I know truffle
we
oil.
Do truffle
get from
oil
you.
For sure. We do white truffles, black truffles during the season. And different vinegars, lots of different vinegars, lots of fruit purees, chocolate for pastries, some puff pastry, as you know, as you use. And right now, well, another thing I want to bring back in is the duck products and some duck sausages, some duck prosciutto, some duck salami, some of that stuff. It's
I see Curtis's face lighting
the duck
up.
Confit.
I don't think I've ever had duck prosciutto. I don't
oh,
know.
Man. Duck prosciutto is amazing. Wow. Yeah, they take the breast and they do it in a prosciutto style. It's salty and firm. And it's delicious. What's cool, though, you know, we're sitting in Barrel House 101. Most people think of a bar and a brewery or a beer house that needs, like, some bar food, chilies and burgers and fries. You can do really fine gourmet foods and meals and put a beer next to it. Especially the styles that are out there today and some of the specialty yeast that will really stand up and accentuate. I think, to use the cliche, beer is the new wine. It's just, you know, coffee, beer, wine, fine liquors, they all have a nuance to them that allows you to really experience awesome taste experiences and events.
Yeah, so.
You know, talking about the duck, you have to understand a breast of a duck. A full breast. You have the right side and the left. I love breasts, by the way.
He's looking around.
Can we get that on tape?
Are we still talking about food?
Right.
Hoo-ah.
I've kind of come in and out of that conversation. All either the 4-inch girth and it's salty and sweet, and then you want to finish with it, and now we're talking about breasts.
Fritz's tirade about sausages. Oh, poor Curtis is over here. He's red in the face. He had to take off his headphones. I think he waved a little fan too. He's like, I can't listen to this anymore. It's gonna get out on the air. I can't listen.
Yeah,
to
he's
this.
Gonna make us install a delay button. Press it.
Have they ever delayed anyone on internet radio?
Never.
We could be the first.
Are we live? Or?
We are live, my friend.
Oh my God! But I do love duck breast. The duck breast, a moolah duck, is the best one. You go to Chinatown, you eat the Peking duck, you eat another duck, but the moolah, the malah, or the moolah, is usually from Canada. The breast alone is about 3 pounds. Wow. So imagine how big the
bird
is.
That's a handful.
Okay. When you dry it out and you cure it and you do the prosciutto on it, you don't like the 3 pounds. And you slice it thin, it's like.
You got to be careful, though, because you know more than a handful or a mouthful is wasted.
Yeah, no, that is right. So, Fritz, why, I mean, I don't know. It seems to me that when you mention duck, everybody kind of, some people like to cringe and go like, oh, duck, like what? I don't understand. Like, we have such, you can't hear me or can you hear me? I'm saying, what is our kind of hate or love-hate relationship with duck? I mean, I don't know. Some people, they hear duck and they're just like, oh, they're turned off. They don't even want to know anything about it. Maybe we've had the wrong kind of duck. Maybe it's been prepared the wrong way. I think there's a lot of education still as it comes to duck that's out there. I mean, you know, maybe you're used to it because of the type of cuisine that you like to eat. But, you know, your average consumer may not be used to, like, oh, duck breast, duck prosciutto.
They have no idea what it is. But the best way to introduce someone to a duck product would be to the duck coffee. That'd be the easiest way. The duck coffee is usually the breast and the thigh. It's the thigh and the leg.
But working in the thighs.
And the confit style, I mean, you're really cooking the duck down in its own juices and oils, right? And then sealing
in fat.
And
the fat of it.
Because you use confit as a term with a lot of different meats, but duck confit is pretty common.
Duck confit is pretty common. And again, once you're done cooking it, the fat, you put it in the refrigerator, it cools down. You could take actually that fat and put it on a toast bread. I had Mark, I can't think of a Coyote Cafe in New Mexico. Oh, he did fries, and people would fly to there to do
duck fat fries.
Duck fat fries.
Awesome.
You know where we can get duck fat around here, right? Down the Ventura Meat Company. They sell duck fat.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and there you go. You know, people, going back to your concern about intimidation, you know, one, I think people are kind of concerned about the gaminess of duck or the unusual component of duck because it's not typical on people's plates. But also when we talk about duck fat, there's a health concern. People say, oh, well, it's so fatty. But it's just like using any other oil. When you're deep frying, you know, right, duck fat, canola oil, sesame oil, extra virgin olive oil, if you use it right, you cook it at the right temperatures, the consumption or the saturation of oil into your product is going to be pretty minimal. Duck fat adds a richness and an earthiness to whatever you're cooking it in. I actually, I deep fried chicken drumsticks in duck fat.
In duck fat?
Oh, la la.
It was super
there's
foul.
Something wrong there.
Pun intended.
No. What you need to do is separate the skin on the drumstick, put bacon into it, and then deep fry it in duck.
You're talking my language, my friend.
I one up your bacon with prosciutto.
Oh, you're getting a little frou-frou on me.
and then it's sticking in there, but...
Maybe we could just wrap the drumstick in prosciutto and then put the skin back on and then wrap in bacon and then deep fry and put that with a nice, rich, stouter porter.
No, I think for the upcoming event that we do, I think the duck confit will be a nice way to introduce it.
I agree.
And then we'll follow up further on the line and we'll get some questions and answers.
Yeah.
The beauty of these events is that, one, we have great partners. You know, we're here at Barrel House 101. Jovi, you've been excellent. I really appreciate the amount of attention information and education you provide about the beer. Curtis interjecting as our in-house soundboard engineer, Cicerone, radio man, you name it, he's got the hat
Jack
on.
Of all trades.
Yeah. Right. And Fritz with the cheese. We're really trying to partner with local vendors, but experts in their field. Because, again, what everybody's hungry is about is sharing a passion for food, educating about that food, and then raising awareness for the hungry as well. And we accomplished all three things tonight. And it was through everybody's support and help with a great product and a great event.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Fritz, you mentioned that in the 805, it's harder to get some products. But I'm hoping, and through people like yourself and maybe other companies will take note, that if we start asking for these things and more people start asking for them, that we'll be able to get some of these things, especially through you. I mean, the first thing we talked about when you had all those cheese was like, oh, finally, somebody that we can get, someone right, who's local, that we can have a direct connection with and learn and educate. Because I think that's the hardest part is just – nobody wants to throw a bunch of cheese on a plate and just say, here's the cheese, and then a customer is intimidated. And then nobody benefits from that because then we don't, you know, no one's learning, no one's getting into it. It's the same with beer or wine or anything. We can't just throw it out there and say, here you go, you know, enjoy.
What differentiates us with others is that we have a passion for what we do, okay? Same thing as a mechanic. He would go ahead and work on an Audi, on a BMW or whatever car, or my 1990 Ford Escort. You know, he works on it, but he's passionate about it. It works. But I tell you, when you have like-minded people and you share, people are willing to listen and enjoy what you're talking about. You know, I really think, you know, in New York, there's a place in New York, I think where it was, but I ate a duck confit taco. So I'm thinking of you, chef, here in your kitchen.
Oh, yeah, duck confit taco.
Okay? Go ahead.
Sorry, we're trying to do business at the same time. Wait, I'm going to step out for a second. Okay.
So, duck confit tacos.
A duck confit taco. Maybe one of these days we should come. Actually, we should do that. I'm getting some. I'm getting some delivered. I think tomorrow or Friday. And if you are willing to try, we could go ahead and try it on our own and try to make a duck confit taco or a quesadilla. Let's do a quesadilla.
I think so.
Are you game for it?
That sounds delicious.
Okay.
Yeah.
See again, how you present it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. When you think about a duck, you're thinking about foul, the foul taste, and this. But yet, if you take it and you work with the product, and you pair it with a cheese, and you make a quesadilla, you make a taco, with the local agricultural resource that we have here, you incorporate all those things in it. You know, you got a winner here.
That sounds duck good. I just walked in. Taco. Duck confit taco sounds awesome.
And, still ringing in his ears.
And or quesadilla.
Duck confit quesadilla with your
the black pepper cheese.
Oh, there you go, black pepper cheddar.
I'll do that too.
Curtis, you've been back here working the board all night, though. I want to get some of your feedback because you tasted some of the beers and cheeses. Why do you think the pairings worked the way they did? I mean, Joby brought out some great beers, but it took us a little while to really come up with the combinations the other day before we settled on the four that we had tonight. Was there anything that stood out for you, or any? Nuances that you like to highlight?
Well, one of the things that Fritz said early on was, what are these cows eating? You know, and talking about the grass that they're eating. And there are some really great cheeses where the cows are, the cheese is made early in the season. So these cows are eating fresh green grass that is, you know, just these little sprouts that are coming up. And the cheese has a decidedly grassy kind of flavor for it. And so whenever I see that description on a cheese, I always think big IPAs. I want something that has a big grassy kind of herbal, piney kind of flavors, and those things go together really well. And so, you know, that was one of them. The water that's used, certainly. I mean, if these are coming from, if the beer and the cheese are coming from the same part of the country where the cows, where the water is coming through. Now, the water is going to be filtered in most places now, so that doesn't have as big a role to play in
right.
But then with beer-washed cheeses, and especially like the Chimay that was out tonight, I mean,
isn't that awesome?
The Chimay cheese is made by the same monks that are making the Chimay beer. This is all in-house stuff. So they've already got the beer, and they're using all of the same sort of bacteria and wild yeast that are floating through the abbey, that are the nuanced flavors in the beer are going to show up in the cheese as well. And then you start coating it with the beer. This is, you know, those are no-brainer kinds of pairings for me.
I was really happy to see the surprise and excitement on some people's faces as well with the lambic and the white cheddar black pepper combination.
That was nice.
It was very nice.
Yeah,
and
it was different.
I think people weren't ready for that. Like you said during the discussion, who would put kind of a fruity aromaed beer with cheddar and black pepper? But it worked, and I think they worked well.
Right. You've got that generally a very light-bodied beer. There's a carbonic bite. It's very clean. You know, even though you're getting a sour and maybe some sweetness, the carbonation is cleansing the palate, which gives you that kind of sensation of what a pepper does. But then you've also got that funky yeast in there that played a role in making it sour, so the funk and the pepper are natural naturally complementary
sure.
to each other.
And I think what was cool, you know, Krista, who's been at the last tasting as well, she picked up on something totally different than what I would have, but she felt like it left almost a blueberry yogurt kind of flavor on her palate, after she swallowed and took in a good breath, she's like, you know, there's something about the sweetness of the lambic, the black pepper, and the creamy nuttiness of the cheese that leaves me with a blueberry yogurt kind of familiarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So something interesting we did last week, and I told them was, you know, Fritz showed up with the cheese, and then, like he was joking earlier, we had 101 beers to pick to pair from, and I was telling them that day, I was like, well, you know, normally you might, if you're doing a brewery-specific, you know, pairing or you're doing something like that, you have your four beers, and then you go out and you have this world of food to pair with it. Mm-hmm. And so that
we
was
did it reverse.
We did it reverse, which was fine. That was a lot more fun, actually. It was really cool. It was much more challenging and fun. And
I actually enjoyed stimulating your intelligence.
Well, no,
because you have it.
I don't have that much left.
Yes,
if I keep
do.
Drinking beer. I'm losing brain cells every day.
You know,
no,
talking,
but it was fun.
We're talking about the beer washed, the beer washed cheese. I did a cheese tasting in Los Angeles once, and the cheese that was the highlight of the tasting was Appenzeller. Okay, it's a Swiss cheese. Okay, when they finish washing the cheese, the hay that the cows eat, they wrap the cheese with the hay. So it's full circle.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You know, they drink the milk, they drink the hay, they produce the milk, they do the cheese, they do all that, and they wrap the cheese with the foin in French, the hay. And it brings out all the flavor of the milk.
Yeah,
it's comes out
we
of
may
it.
Have to do that cheese again and try to pull in some more of those farmhouse ales or something right along lines of those.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. That's the thing was like, we would start talking like, hey, we almost did it all Belgian, but you can get real specific and be like, you know what? Let's do all funky beers with cheese.
So stay tuned. We're coming back.
Fruit beers with cheese. I mean, it's awesome. What I love about beer compared. I mean, I love wine. I'm definitely a wine drinker also, but the flavors in the beer and the liberties that you have a little more liberties in it. It's a lot more fun like that because you pick up on the little nuances. And if you mess up, it's not as bad as if you mess up with wine.
I think Tom Hilton put it pretty well recently. He said, after the second or third glass of wine, you really don't care if it's Cabernet, Zinfandel, or Merlot.
I think he said that about beer tonight, too.
Yeah, it starts tasting the same way, but with the beer, you're going to get something a little different. Even as it starts to warm up, it's going to change within itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Tom had seconds.
Yeah, we looked out. We were on cheese number two. We looked down, and Tom's plate was empty. He said, I didn't get any. I'm like, I see crumbs.
Well, that's, you know, that's one of the things that certainly we're a bunch of beer geeks, and so we can pick apart those beers. But I think, you know, I could say that about wines, and my wine palate isn't nearly as developed as my beer palate. So after a few wines, definitely I can, it's much harder for me to pull those
and
apart.
It does too. Come into what you're tuned into, so we got to give a little bit of respect to the wine drinkers out there.
Yeah.
But I think, by and large, the varieties of beers available to you and the different styles and flavor adventures you can go on is pretty diverse compared to wine.
Right.
Well, and I come from a philosophy too that beer is made from a grain, and what are all of these animals that we're eating? What are they eating? They're eating some sort of grain, grass kind of deal. And so that has
not
to come
grapes.
That has to come through at some point. And so that I think that's just on a very basic level, that's why beer pairs so well with food, is because at any given point in this food chain, it all started with this grass that we either turned into a vegetarian tofu or we turned into a prime rib. I mean, whatever it is, there was these grains and these grasses had a part to do with it. And especially when we're talking about these cheeses, coming back to the cheese, where it's amazing how well you can taste how pronounced the grassy flavor is in a spring cheese as opposed to the fall cheese where the cows are just eating dry hay. And there's a place in Vermont, and I'm trying to think of Cabot Creamery. And so
they make incredible butter.
And they only make this certain cheese in the spring when the cows are eating the green grass, because the other stuff, they can make cheese out of it, but it doesn't taste good. Taste as good. So that's what, you know, these are some, just the way that these artisans are making cheeses. Sure.
And that's one of the great things about doing an event like tonight, Fritz, is that you know, everybody's like, I'm pretty sure everybody learned something about cheese. And yeah, even though we like cheese, I love cheese. Oh,
yeah. I don't think there's anyone in the room outside of us who had a Sage Derby before.
Yeah, right.
Oh, wow. I mean, that vibrant green cheese, there you go. People mm-hmm. probably avoid it on the shelf.
Yeah, because it's green.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it looks bad or whatever. But that cheese melts incredible. I was telling you, on a turkey. You said quesadilla, turkey sandwich with some pesto.
We have a sandwich episode coming up.
But, you know, try the corn.
Corn tortilla, quesadilla. Corn tortilla, taco.
Got it.
Corn tortilla, the taco. The flour, it takes it away. Right. Try the corn. You have an extra abundant flavor that comes in with the corn.
I'm looking forward to that.
I am too. But you know what I'm also looking forward to? A nice frosty beer that's supposed to be on its way. So I'm getting ready. I appreciate all the time, but I'm getting ready to bow out and have a beer with my wife after this fine. Event. So.
I think we're going to wrap it up anyways here. That was a great last call.
So we're talking, to wrap it up, we're talking about duck confit tacos. Yes. Very soon. Actually, when we do a show, we don't have to strictly, we could get the kitchen involved.
Right.
You know, it's just coming to me right now as I'm speaking to you. We could go ahead and get the kitchen involved doing the tacos for us and filling out the duck confit. I don't know. I'm thinking
we could
about
do
it.
An outdoor kitchen and have somebody and so you could see it.
Summertime, it's been beautiful weather.
Yep.
So,
yeah. Outdoor kitchen is beckoning. And so,
we live in a beautiful place.
Yeah, we do.
Where are we?
I like the way you think.
I think we're in Ventura, downtown Ventura, California.
Coming to you live from Ventura.
From the 805. I like that.
Yeah.
That's well, right. Fritz and Jason, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for putting on Happy Hour during our event.
Yeah, no, that was fun. Thanks, Curtis. You did it all. No.
I just got to sit here and listen to everyone talk.
And I love the song. Every time I hear it, it's Happy Hour again.
It's always Happy Hour.
You have a lot of editing
almost
to do.
It's almost as good as what you just sang right there. I think we're going to get Jason to
record, to cut, to cover.
I don't have to come up with a theme song for Pints and Pairings, do I?
No. We'll see.
So I think I think the public in general that was here, I think everyone that was here, they really appreciate what we did. The atmosphere was perfect. You know, the host, Toby, I mean, Jesus, come on. You did it.
I didn't even do anything.
You did it.
I didn't do anything.
That's exactly it. You
there were a couple times where I thought Fritz was going to snag himself with his microphone. He kept walking way out into the crowd.
And I just told Fritz that
next time, wireless mic for Fritz.
That's good. That might be as cheap as a 50-foot mic cord.
But you know what I like best when I do those shows is when I do those food tasting is I'm talking. I'm passionate about it or whoever. Somebody else is passionate. And you walk to a table and they're talking about the trip they took to Europe. And they're not paying attention to me. And I usually put the microphone in front of them.
No, you were very good at saying, excuse me, pay attention. I heard somebody outside, I was walking by, and they said, oh, man, that guy really knows a lot, but he's very opinionated.
It happens.
That's what makes a good show, though. You know, you can be really educated and just not have any opinions, and nobody wants to listen to you. Right. But as soon as you start, you know, that's what gives it color, I guess. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say one last thing.
All right.
And that we're all going to the Firestone Invitational. Finally, it's here.
Sweet.
Saturday. And I'll see you guys there. Not you, Fritz. Sorry.
So when you said
three
out of four hosts are going.
I'm counting. I'm on YouTube.
Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very
much. Yes, you have been listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
Cheers.
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 Thanks, Fritz.
That's awesome.